Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 540, Emmalyn Northway and Dori Smith, co-founders of Mercer.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Karabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
You're listening to So Money, everyone. Welcome back, February 27th, episode 540. I'm your host, Farnoosh Tarabi. As the saying goes, dress for the job you want, not the one you have, right? I remember hearing that when I was in my 20s and thinking, well, better stop shopping at H&M then, I guess, right? But what if you can't exactly afford Prada? And what if the affordable options just don't fit right or they're made out of lousy materials? That's where today's guests enter the picture. Dori Smith and Emmalyn Northway are the co-founders of Mercer. It's a career wear line for the modern professional woman. They met one fateful day while both going to business school at the University of Pennsylvania. They spotted each other across a crowded room because, you know what? They were wearing identical outfits. They initially launched the brand back in 2013 as an e-commerce site. Since then, the company's received mucho praise from many media outlets, including the New York Times, Forbes, Inc. magazine. Last year, they actually ventured from online to a brick and mortar store in New York City, which is an interesting transition, right? Going from online to actually a physical space. So how do they do that? Also, how do two business students with no experience in fashion really get the know-how and the money to start a successful fashion line? And how to know when pairing up with a business partner makes sense? Here's Emmalyn Northway and Dori Smith. Emmalyn Northway and Dori Smith, welcome to So Money, co-founders of Mercer. Once I am done baby making, I'm going to try your clothes, promise. Welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks so much for having us on.
You know, we should tell the audience how we met. We met at the Rockettes.
Yes, it actually was one of the best nights of Emmalyn and my life.
Really?
We're big Christmas fans.
Aw. Yeah, we were both there as guests of Chase. I'm a partner with Chase, and I believe you guys have worked with them in the past as well. So it was a really nice way for them to let us all get together and celebrate the year. And yeah, we got these kind of backstage passes to go see the Rockettes and Christmas Spectacular. It's, you know, whether you celebrate Christmas or not, it is quite the show. And it was nice to make your acquaintance. And I thought at that moment when we met, got to get you two on the show because not only do you have great stories as entrepreneurs, but I think what you're doing with your business is also very groundbreaking. So I'll let you brag about, I'll let you brag about of Mercer for a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the genesis for the idea for the clothing line and how it differentiates.
Absolutely. So this is Dori. Emmalyn and I co-founded of Mercer about 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago. And it actually started with a personal problem. So Emlyn and I both came from conservative business backgrounds. I was in consulting, Emlyn was in finance, and we had to get dressed every day for work. And it was a real struggle for us. And it's kind of unbelievable with, you know, all this movement and excitement around women in the workplace and promoting women and making sure that we're kind of seen as equals, that it was so hard for us to get dressed every morning. So we met at business school. We were at Wharton Business School. And it
was, can I ask what was so hard about it? Was it just that you felt you had to dress differently every day? Men wear uniforms. They can get away with a suit and tie, same suit and tie if they want, 4 days a week. What did you feel was the challenge?
This is Emlyn speaking. I think it was twofold. One was that being a woman and navigating sort of the office dress codes was actually really tricky. We needed to look stylish. We also needed to look office appropriate. And a lot of the mass market brands didn't really understand what that meant. They were pushing short skirts or leather fabrics on us, which were never going to work for us. So it was about finding that balance of what's appropriate and also stylish for us. Then also about price and quality. So, as just starting out on the workforce, we didn't have $500 to be spending on a single dress at a designer store. But we also didn't want a dress that we were going to buy for $100 that was going to fall apart after two wears. So it was really about finding that balance of what can we afford, but then also from a quality standpoint, what do we deserve as working women as well?
Right. That makes sense. So yeah, clearly a need in the marketplace. And it's been a long time since I've had to quote unquote dress up for work. I mean, I dress up sometimes for work events, but I have to give you guys a lot of credit for, you know, every day. And especially now that I'm pregnant, I'm so thankful that I don't have to work in a financial environment, because I know it can be really conservative. I work in the Wall Street area. I see the sea of black suits. Where's the creativity?
Yeah. And it's interesting. You're talking about kind of the most conservative of our customers. So customers who wear suits every day. And that's kind of what we expected when we first launched Dove Mercer. We said, okay, we're going to have lawyers, we're going to have bankers, we're going to have consultants. And we've been surprised by how many other industries have women that are looking for clothes like ours. So there are definitely some pieces that we sell that I wouldn't, you know, have worn to a client meeting when I was in consulting, and it's a little bit more casual. But I think there's just a real movement around looking and feeling your best in the office. And for some people, that might mean jeans and a t-shirt. But for a lot of women, it means feeling put together and having a really well-tailored, well-made dress.
I'm going through your site right now, and it's beautiful, well-tailored, like you said, pieces that seem to work really well as kind of the shell of an outfit. So it's versatile in the sense that if you do work in a more casual environment or a more fashionable or fashion-driven office, you can accessorize, you do it up. Or if you conversely work in a more conservative office, then that same gray dress is sufficient.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that we love to do too is have those same conservative styles, the same sheath dress, but infuse it with a lot of color. So we actually can get creative even if you're in a more conservative environment. And that's what's exciting to us.
So the two of you found each other, discovered each other at Wharton. And I read that what kind of was the light bulb moment was that you were both wearing the same dress. And take me to that moment. What happened?
Yes, literally the same dress. It was the first week of Wharton, and they have all these orientation events. And then there was one that was kind of meet and greet everybody in your class. And Emlyn and I showed up in exactly the same dress. And it wasn't that special. It was A-line black that had a cute belt. And it kind of dawned on us that, you know, this was us putting our best stylish / professional foot forward. And after years and years of working, we ended up with the exact same dress.
But there was a very awkward moment where I sort of looked at Dory and she looked at me from across the room, and we're like, okay, well, I guess we have to talk to each other because we're wearing the same dress and it's awkward to ignore it. So, but before we realized that, it was definitely awkward.
Was it pretty soon after meeting that you decided to start this business, or was it after school? How did it evolve?
We both went to Wharton thinking we were going to do something entrepreneurial. Neither one of us had really kind of hammered out what that was and were open to exploring it when we were at Wharton. And that was kind of the beginning of a conversation around professional clothes for women. We very much agreed on the fact that we ended up choosing between you know, a designer brand on sale and cheaper brand, mass market brands. And we wanted to really test out if that was something that other people were facing. So we utilized Wharton as an opportunity to really dig into that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because a lot of your classmates too are probably in the, in that demo. So how is business doing? How many years have you been in business? And I read somewhere that you're growing triple percentages every year, but maybe that was just an exaggeration. You can tell me.
It sounds right to me. Things are going really, really, really well. So we just passed our third year of business as an online brand. And just over a year ago, we launched our first brick and mortar store in the Flatiron District in New York. And that's been huge for us. What we've realized is having the offline presence is really important for establishing credibility and also giving our customers flexibility to try offline as well. And it's just been great for to really have a place where we can have events and do things that really show off our personality and our mission that aren't just about selling and are a little bit more organic. But having the combination of the two has been great. And currently we're looking to expand to other locations as well. We are also excited to be launching a new website and branding in the coming month, which we're very excited about. But yeah, overall things are going really, really well.
How do two students start a business financially? How did you get this off the ground and give yourselves the financial runway to execute this?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question and something that every entrepreneur struggles with. And there are a lot of ways to do it. Initially, Emily and I self-funded the company. So we had both been in industries where we were pretty well paid and had been able to have a savings account. And that's what we started the company with. So we really invested in ourselves. We invested in our idea and made sure that we were really testing everything in a very methodical way. So we were utilizing that money to the best of our ability. Mm-hmm. And then since then, we have raised a seed round of funding. So we are trying to stay as lean as possible. For us, it's been really important to make sure that we're testing everything and that we're building a company that's sustainable even when there's no outside funding coming in. And this is a problem a lot of companies have faced where they get great valuations, great funding, and then the moment that turns off, they're in trouble. And that's not the company that we're trying to build.
Yes, that was definitely the trend of the last 4 or 5 years. And I also am very skeptical of the companies that get these billion-dollar valuations and they're not profitable. So it's kind of like, well, what is the headline?
Yeah.
I think what is the real headline?
I think especially in an industry like fashion where brand loyalty gets built up over time. So I think that's kind of the value of the company is that over time that comes. And that's not turning VC, you know, billion-dollar valuations overnight. And we're not going to pretend it will.
How do you get the word out? I mean, first you were online, which in some ways can be easier, but also has its own challenges as far as cutting through all the competition and all the noise. So how did you initially launch and get your customers to the point now where you've been confident to start a brick and mortar store, which is very expensive as well?
Yeah, for us, a lot of our early strategy was really based on generating word of mouth, which was something that was more easy for us to do as we were at Wharton with a group of 800 women or so, plus their networks and our existing networks, and really tapping into to those people to help us spread the word. One of the things that we didn't do, which we stick to today, is that we didn't spend thousands and thousands of dollars hiring a firm to do a big splashy launch for us. We wanted to make sure that we were doing it in an organic way and really getting out of the kinks and testing it out ourselves. So we really like relied on the more organic ways to generate sort of that early traction and growth. And it worked for us really well, especially because it was natural. And when you get your friends talking about it and their friends talking about it, then it's a much easier way to get people involved and sell your product.
And the other thing that has been really helpful for us is obviously press, and almost all the press we've gotten, especially the really big pieces, New York Times, Forbes, Inc., that kind of stuff, has been organic as well. So also the press pieces that we have achieved haven't felt like we paid a PR team to get that for us. And then that also just feels much more natural and the readers understand that as well.
That's pretty awesome that you haven't had to have haven't had to hire a PR company to get pieces in the New York Times. And just goes to show you with, you can bootstrap a business. You really can. So more credit to you. How did you know that you, the two of you, were going to work so well together? I mean, clearly you have the same style, taste, but any advice for those of us listening who are interested in going into business with a friend, a colleague, an acquaintance, and, you know, and partnering up with anybody takes a lot of thought.
It's a great question and often a tricky one. We were after sort of this, having this meeting great revelation. We were definitely friends before we went full force into business. But I think and we realized that early on, but one of the things that I think helped us sort of transition from being friends to business partners was setting some early timelines. So one of the things that we both agreed to is that we were going to do this sort of initial test round. We called it a beta launch. And we invested our own money into producing 5 pieces that we were then going to turn around and sell to our colleagues at Wharton and just get a sense for, was this an idea that had legs? Was it worth investing more money into and going forward with? And we both agreed that that was sort of going to be the next point where we were going to decide whether to go forward or not. And if we agreed that we were both in after that, then we were both in. But it gave us really sort of like a chance to have an out if we needed it. And luckily we didn't, we were both on the same page. But I think making sure you're sort of giving each other as friends and as business partners a timeline and points where you can both sort of regroup and decide if you still want to be in it. That's really helpful.
Test each other out.
Yeah.
In a relatively risk-free environment.
One other question we get a lot is about our roles within the company. So obviously we started the company and there were just two of us. And then since then we've hired plenty of people. And it actually was, I think, the fact that we didn't define our roles from the get-go, that we now have roles where we're both very effective. So neither of us had started companies before. We didn't know our style. We didn't know exactly what we were going to be like in this entrepreneurial world. And kind of falling into, you know, what we were really strong at and what we were really interested in and what our skills were most useful for has been great for us. Because I think a lot of times founders are like, okay, I'm the COO, you're the CFO, and then we're going to hire a CMO. And it doesn't work that well. And it's easier to kind of figure it out organically and naturally than rush into the role definition.
In my experience interviewing other fashion designers and fashion brands, it sounds to me like they always knew they wanted to be designers. They were obsessed with fashion. They were sketching since they were 10 years old. They went to design school. And the two of you come from, you know, it seems like a different background where you worked in finance and business and consulting. So where does the talent come from? Who's the sketcher in the partnership? Who's the fashion?
Neither of us, actually.
Neither of you. So who comes up with the ideas?
So we have a full-time designer who has really been with us since we did that beta line, which was when we realized that neither of us were actually sketchers. And she went to Parsons. She had her own tailored clothing line before she joined us. And she's really skilled with that. And when we're lucky to have her sort of, you know, behind the scenes actually doing the sketching and things
okay.
like that. Luckily for you, we're not the ones doing that.
Well, maybe I thought you had some hidden talents or something. You know, you never know.
It's also been good to have kind of her name's Asia, with the fashion background, and then us with a business background, because we really look at things in a different way, especially when it comes to business dressing, because Asia hadn't actually stepped foot in an office until we did a trunk show at Deloitte Consulting.
Yeah.
Where does the name of Mercer come from?
So Mercer is actually a high-end fabric distributor in London back in like the 1700s. And we chose the name because we thought it was really speaking to what we were trying to do, which was offer a higher quality product at a price point that was accessible. And we like this idea of adding up around it because we thought it was, you know, we believe that we're part of a broader movement of women who are, you know, embracing their creative sides and personalities in their office wardrobe, and are expecting more from everything they're wearing to the office, and thinking they don't need a separate wardrobe from work and weekend. It can all be one and work for them.
Well, it also sounds very urban. Like Mercer's obviously a British Street of in London, and Soho is a lot of, in a lot of the names in New York come from, you know, the UK, but when's your store on Mercer Street going to open up in Soho? That's the next thing, right? It's got to be.
You know, when we can afford it, we will. Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. All right, let's talk money. Let's talk about, we talked a little bit about money, about how you raised capital for your business. But personally, what are your financial philosophies? Dory, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, my philosophy is save, 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 splurge. So I've found that I get a lot more joy out of doing anything in a really, really big way than doing a lot of small things. So for example, I'm more excited about buying a front row ticket to a concert and have Taylor Swift sweat on me than going to two concerts and sitting in the nosebleeds.
Yeah. So you do allow yourself to enjoy your money after some hard work.
Yes. And I kind of save up until I'm ready to really spend.
Emmeline, how about you?
Yeah. One of the things that I try to live by is not to be an impulsive spender. I have a personal rule where if there's something I'm looking to spend money on or make a purchase on, I make myself wait for a week. And if I'm still thinking about it and still regretting that I didn't buy it a week later, then usually that tells me that's something that I really need and really wanted. And I think it's allowed me to sort of making sure that I'm making the right decisions that are actually important to me and not, making purchases that are impulsive and then I really don't need.
That's a really good point. I actually just came across a study that found that we sometimes just fall in love with the idea of having something as opposed to actually needing it, wanting it. You know, once we own it, it kind of, the fantasy does not get fulfilled. And and maybe you have found this too with your own store, your online store. I was just looking at some data that looked at online shopping carts and the abandonment rate, which is very high across the e-commerce world. So it's like almost 80% of online shopping carts in the last 6 months were abandoned.
That I'm not surprised, as we found too that a lot of times customers are sort of doing their browsing online and putting things into their carts online. And then they're maybe coming into the store later to actually make that purchase, because once they get there, then they're deciding that something they actually want.
Right.
So it's a lot of it is sort of doing the test drive before they actually make the purchase.
Do a test drive. That's right. You might end up saving yourself a lot of money. What about your childhoods? Do you have similar backgrounds when it comes to, like, you know, your economics and your financial perspectives? I'd love for you guys to share each a story maybe that happened in childhood that later as adults really, as you reflect on that, you think in hindsight, that was really a pivotal moment for me financially.
Sure. So this is Emily speaking, and I'm from Michigan, sort of a suburban town called Grand Rapids. And one thing that I was remembering was that when I was little, I used to always set up stands in front of my driveway, and I would sell anything. I would sell lemonade. I would sell friendship bracelets that I made. And I still remember one day I had a friend over, and she was complaining that all I wanted to ever do was set up stands and sell stuff. And it sort of made me wonder, what was I doing it for? And looking back, I realized it wasn't really about just amassing pocket change for, you know, my own spending, but I really enjoyed the actual process of selling something that people liked. And I enjoyed the experience of talking to people and giving them something they wanted. And I think that was really important for starting of Mercer. It's not just about money isn't fulfilling in itself, but making sure that you're earning in a way that is fulfilling. And for me, it's not just making money, but knowing that I'm making products people want. And that's sort of what makes me happy and driven to earn.
Wow. That's a great story. And clearly you had entrepreneurial tendencies as a child.
Yeah, they were always there.
They were always there. So Dory, how about you?
Yeah. So I actually grew up in New York City in Manhattan. So Emily and I have very similar values, but our childhoods definitely looked a little bit different. I didn't have stands. I have seen stands in Manhattan, but not when I was growing up in, you know, 80s and New York wasn't as good. So the first memory I have where I kind of thought about what it meant to save and to spend was when I bought a birthday present for my mom. I was about 6 or 7. It's like one of my very earliest memories. And I had $2 and I don't even know where that came from. Maybe the Tooth Fairy or something. And my dad took me down to the card store in our apartment building, and I bought one of those cheesy, like, world's best mom mugs. And I gave her the saleswoman the $2, and I got 25 cents back. And my dad looks at me and goes, "Okay, and now there's the beginning of your new savings." And it struck me how quickly that money went away, and how hard it was to really amass it over time. So granted, I was talking about 25 cents and $2, but it took me a long time to get there. And it was so fast for it to go away. And, you know, I think it was valuable. It was a valuable present sentimentally. And if my mom hadn't recently Marie Kondo'd her apartment, she probably would still have it. And it'd be worth
it. She didn't keep the mug? Come on.
You know, didn't spark joy.
No, it didn't spark joy. How old were you then?
I'm guessing 6 or 7.
That was quite the observation.
Yeah. It was a bit of a bummer to only have a quarter.
But did it make you want to then quickly replenish?
Yeah, I think it just goes back to this, like, save, splurge thing that I kind of have as my ethos of it takes a while, but then it's worth it in the end.
Mm-hmm. What about your failures? And this you can pull from your lives as entrepreneurs, or also your personal financial experiences. What's been a hard lesson that you've learned?
Sure. This is Emily talking. I'll talk about something on the personal front. I think one of the things that I did very poorly was transitioning from the corporate world, where I was earning money and finance, into the back to business school, where I wasn't earning money. And I think I was basically spending the same and living the same similar lifestyle as I was when I was in finance. And I sort of knew that I shouldn't be spending that way, but I sort of avoided having to set a budget and readjust, like, my lifestyle, having to make sacrifices longer than it should. And it definitely took more of a dip in my bank account than I should have let it for me to readjust. And I think it's really about making sure that you're facing the hard stuff sooner. And what I found was that making that sort of lifestyle change to reset your budget and things that you are worth spending on isn't as hard as it seems. It's easier to do it earlier than later.
Fail early and fail a lot when you have less at stake. Yeah, for sure. Dori, how about you?
So here's another Mercer one. One of the things that we have to spend a lot of money on and invest in as an e-commerce company is photography. So every time we do a photo shoot, there are a million things to pay for: models, props, hair, makeup, equipment, a studio, a photographer. So it gets very expensive very quickly. And one of our early photo shoots, we met a photographer. I think we found her like on Craigslist or something. And you know, her portfolio online was good. Definitely good enough. And she said, I have a friend who has a studio. We can use it for free. So she gave us an unbelievable deal. She basically worked for nothing, had a free studio. So we're like, great, here we go. So the day of the shoot, we get to this quote unquote studio, and it's a shoe factory, like a literal shoe factory in New York City that had a wall that we ended up using as the backdrop. And it was probably the most uncomfortable day we've had while working at this company. It was dusty. It smelled funny. There's shoe polish everywhere. The worst part of it was the photos came out pretty subpar, more than subpar. And we ended up having to reshoot everything, rehire the models, rehire hair and makeup, find a new photographer, find new props, find new equipment. And we ended up spending twice as much or almost twice as much as we would have had we done it right the first time. And that's something we've learned, is that if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. So it's worth not risking that.
Yeah. In hindsight, what due diligence would you have done that you didn't do?
I think we would have gotten more information about a photographer. So now we use all of our contacts in the fashion world to really make sure we have references for photographers and we don't just hire them based on an online portfolio. We would have site scouted the site to make sure that we were comfortable there, that it was a good place for us to be branding our clothes. And we basically wouldn't do half the same things as we did that mm-hmm. shoot.
Well, okay. So money moment. Maybe you have a shared one for the business.
Yeah. Well, actually one of our so money moments was the very first time that we got outside funding for Mercer. So it was while we were at Wharton, and you're part of the Wharton Venture Initiation Program. And we won what was called the Snyder Sneed Venture Award. And it was only $2,500, but for us, it was just so meaningful that someone besides ourselves was willing to invest in our idea and give us money for it, that it was really validating to have that and have someone show us that.
And I'm sure you hear this all the time, but they were men that we were pitching to.
Yeah.
You know, that's again a problem, but convincing men that this is the best venture at Wharton to invest in, and it's women's clothing, really kind of was, yeah, it was so money for us.
What are your habits? Do you have, each of you have financial habits? I know with the whole save, splurge approach to, you know, Dori, to your finances, is there a habit that you practice to make sure that actually can happen?
Yeah, I think on the same lines, I bring my lunch to work most days. And that sort of it helps me to not spend that medium amount on a meal that I'm not going to think about ever again. So I always add avocado to everything. So a chopped salad will cost me $15 every day. And to me, that's not worth it if I could save up that $15 for 5 days in a week and spend it on like a real dining experience at a great restaurant. So bringing lunch to me has made quite a bit of difference.
Yeah, I'm impressed. An entrepreneur who brings her lunch to work. That's pretty.
So, to be honest, sometimes it's like a frozen Amy's meal from Whole Foods. So I'm not cooking necessarily.
Listen, you're talking to the girl who lived off of like Subway sandwiches for half of her 20s. And even still, I have a soft spot in my heart for Subway sandwiches.
That smell.
I don't even go for like the big deal. I just get like the veggie subs, and I think it's just nostalgic at this point. Emmeline, how about you? What's a habit?
One thing that I do to sort of really face my fears is I always find myself wanting to avoid logging on to my bank account to check my balance, to pay a bill or whatever it was. So I basically forced myself to deal with it by setting up an alert from my bank account once a week. I basically get a mobile text that says like your balance is so and so. And it's really a way to make sure that I'm keeping tabs of my finances and forcing myself to do it. That doesn't require, you know, a login and a password. But it's really there for me and forces me to make sure I'm on top of things.
Let's do some So Money fill in the blanks really quick. You ladies have been great sports throughout this interview. So let's finish it off on a light note. So whoever wants to jump in first, feel free. Finish the sentence. If I won the lottery tomorrow, maybe you'll learn a lot about each other, by the way, through this process.
I don't think that's possible at this point.
You're like, I know too much. Yeah. Emily.
For each other and guess the answer.
All right. If I won the lottery tomorrow, let's say $100 million, the first thing I would do is?
I would buy an apartment.
I would take team of Mercer on a fabulous trip.
Would you invite Emily to that trip? Because apparently she's going on her own vacation.
She'll be in her new apartment.
Oh, okay. Right. She's going to buy an apartment. One thing I spend on that makes my life easier or better is?
It's Emily. Seamless for dinner. It's just so quick and easy.
I am a Rent the Runway Unlimited member.
Oh, yeah.
And it's my jam. I get all these super trendy, expensive things that I don't have to buy and won't have to worry about reselling next season.
Do you have enough places to go to wear these things at?
Well, like for example, right now I have this amazing Elizabeth and James leopard print coat. So it's my outerwear for the season.
Oh, so they're not just doing that for like evening gowns and stuff, but it's
no,
just-
actually you can get of Mercer on Rent the Runway. So
you
can rent your work clothes as well.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I have to check that out. Thanks for giving me one more thing to spend my money on.
Yeah, you're.
By the way, Seamless. I have to cut back. It's ridiculous. Like for those of you who aren't from New York listening to the show, Seamless is our all too easy website that lets us order from basically all of our neighborhood favorite joints, and you put in your credit card. You know, it includes tip and everything, and it just basically click and your food arrives, and you don't have to have cash, and it's just too gosh darn easy, to the point where one year I was looking at my year-to-date spending. Yeah, guess what the number two category after housing was? Food. And a lot of that food was
Seamless.
Seamless. So Seamless is getting a lot of my income.
Mine too. I spent too many days like hangry in the grocery store trying to figure out what I was going to make for dinner. And it's just so easy to not think about it and just press that button.
Hangry is the worst.
It's the worst.
All right. One thing I splurge on. What is it? The best splurge you've got?
Manicures.
Yeah.
Barry's boot camp workout classes.
Oh, yeah. Those are expensive. What, $35 a pop?
Yes, they are. And there's no discount for buying in bulk.
Same with like places like SoulCycle. Like they don't care.
No.
Your loyalty means nothing to them.
Nope.
Give us your money, bitches.
Doing it, so.
Yeah, right. Okay. One thing I wish I had learned about money growing up is?
For me, it's that everything's pretty much negotiable. Usually there's whether you're looking for us at of Mercer, whether it's a photographer or model or whatever it is, a quoted price is really about, you know, something that can be negotiated and it can work from both sides. If they're willing to work with a startup and want to work with us and we have a budget, there's just a lot of flexibility there.
Mine is, kind of about investing in education. So I kind of always knew that quote, I should invest in my education. But when I was in undergrad, I didn't really know what that meant. So I went to classes and then I did well enough. And then I had fun with my friends. Going back to grad school, I think I really thought more about what it meant to be investing in my education and what it meant to be on a university campus and surrounded by such brilliant minds who are so willing to help and be involved. So I think I got a lot more out of grad school than I did necessarily at Princeton in undergrad.
Hmm. Well, I think that's true for a lot of people who go to grad school. I mean, that's when an experience in your life that you've now consciously made the choice to focus on something very specific. And a lot of us pay for our own way through grad school. So it's more meaningful in that sense too. So I think a lot of people would relate to that. I know I certainly can relate when I went to journalism school. I kind of finally felt that I discovered my academic calling, and then, you know, obviously my professional calling too.
Yep.
All right, ladies, here's your so money moment. Tell us, I'm so money because...
Can we have the same one?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But you have to say it together in sync. No, I'm kidding.
we could do that. We're so money because we started a successful company that helps empower working women.
I love it. You have. And congratulations. And it's just the beginning. So we look forward to seeing how 2017 shapes out for you, the two of you. And once I'm back to my normal size, look forward to test driving your clothes and wishing you a great rest of your year. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
If you'd like to learn more about Emmalyn and Dory, visit Of Mercer's website at ofmercer.com. They're also on Twitter at ofmercer. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Remember, if you have any questions for me, just go to somoneypodcast.com, click on Ask Farnoosh, and let me know what's on your money mind. Thanks for tuning in, and I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.